And Steve showed me his talk before he started, and he showed me 22 pages which he extracted from it, which he, because he thought it might go on for just a little too long. But there's an awful lot of material that he's got about utopian socialists and others of that period. So when we get into discussion, I think that he would be very happy to take questions on quite a wide range of kind of issues. Don't hold back. Okay, we're now into comments and questions. If you want to make a statement, please do. If you want to ask a question, please do. And as I said, Steve is quite open to sort of talking around this whole subject. She's going to do that awkward thing and start us off. I can see by your faces you're all burning with questions that you actually want to ask. I know we're quite a shy lot.
Okay, then.
The shyest of all of us.
I'll display my ignorance here. You talked about a statement that all property was theft. Mm. And you said there was a contradiction in it. Then while the old gears were wearing, and I was sort of like, trying to work it out. You went on to something else.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I'll try.
Because, we have probably like the capitalist claim that they own this stuff, property, blah, 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 and of course it's socially produced, so therefore it's socially produced, it should be socially owned, but it's not. If they claim it's their property, so therefore there's a kind of theft involved. So, I'm a bit all woolly on that, so could you
I will try.
Clear it up for me?
Yeah, I'll try. Yeah. Should we take a few?
I think that's quite a question in itself. I think if we will play by ear.
Well, let's go back to Sed. Yeah, I mean, it took me quite a few minutes, Danny, working it out when I was reading about the statement and trying to understand it myself.
Is your question related, Sed? Well, in that case, do you want to offer it?
I'm sort of partly answering it.
Okay.
I think Armin Bruno basically says property is theft, but then he kind of goes on to say property is freedom.
Yeah.
So he contradicts himself, and then he's saying, small property is freedom, type thing. And I think a later anarchist kind of more or less takes this on board, and that anarchist would be Colin Ward, and ends up being a sort of a very liberal form of anarchism in a sense, which takes on board small capitalism. That's how I would interpret Proudhon, and I'm sure that's how Colin Ward interpreted Proudhon. Yeah.
Okay, should I let speak now?
Yeah, please do.
Proudhon's not actually saying all property is theft. But I think he means that by property is theft. What I understand it to mean, the fact that it's illogical in some way, is that to have theft, you have to have rightfully owned property. And if there's no such thing as property, there can be no theft. I think Marx actually gets it right when he actually says what property Proudhon is actually talking about. He's talking about modern bourgeois property. But he doesn't say that. He seems to be talking about property in general. That's how I understand it. What Sturr says, he does say property is liberty, property is freedom. To have property is for an individual to have property is the greatest bulwark against the state. I mean, that doesn't sound like anything dissimilar to what a Thatcherite would say in the 1980s about owning your own house would be like some sort of bulwark against the state. To me, there's no difference. And like Sturr said, later on, he would be advocating the possession of property. But the answer to your question, Danny, that's what I was saying. The theft presupposes rightfully owned property, but if there's no such thing as property, there can be no theft. They seem to cancel each other out. So I was a bit confused about it as well.
I had a sort of understanding. I'm not really very clear about this, but I had an understanding that Marx was really saying that something along the lines that, what is theft? You ask what the question it means, and theft is a legal form.
Yeah.
Within a capitalist society, the structure of the law is actually built upon the nature of capitalist property. So it simply mirrors the nature of capitalist property. So the idea that property is theft is in fact self-contradictory, because what becomes theft in capitalist society is anything which actually contradicts the institution of property or negates the institution of property. So if you actually transgress it, then it becomes theft. So because capitalist society itself defines what is theft and what isn't, you can't then go on to say property is theft, because property by very nature is not theft.
Yes.
Somebody may be able to put that more clearly than I did.
Yeah. Does it not follow, therefore, that the only crime is not owning property?
Property is a crime.
Yes. Indeed, in fact, of course, in capitalist society, 90% of crime is property-related crime.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm.
Okay. Anyone want anything else?
There's just so much there, can't you?
Yeah, sorry about that.
It was a very detailed talk. There was an awful lot there to kind of chew
on. I was trying to tread a middle way between sort of superficiality and in-depthness, but I may have gone a bit too far in depth. But,
yeah. I mean, let's open it up. The whole, we know there was a whole kind of set of issues here about the nature of socialism, about the nature of anarchism, the nature of utopian socialism. Yeah. Does anybody have any more general questions or comments to make on this kind of very broad subject? Jackie?
There was something that Steve actually said in his talk which interested me. This
Labour term vouchers, yeah.
And I heard you say that the party has never advocated such a thing. Well, I know I've had an argument with a member, which is not the party, of course, who went on with this nonsense. And I do. Can you explain a bit more about this Labour theory, these Labour vouchers?
Well, we don't advocate them because basically they can be the basis of a new monetary system.
Who? Yes, but who is it who puts their views forward? As well as
food. Well, there were certainly economists in England in the 1820s and 1830s who sort of supported those ideas.
Is there any groups nowadays, you know?
Not that I'm aware of. But
the Leninists in America.
I would have thought there would be.
Who? The Leninists in America.
Thank you. I knew I'd heard it somewhere. Yeah, it's along the same line, actually. I've often thought about what a moneyless socialist society would be like. And the thing about the voucher, I've often thought, like, well, there'd have to be some sort of form of record of distribution of where things, goods and things are going, supermarkets, warehouses, keep, you know, where there's places, you know, need wood, whatever. There's got to be some sort of record, administration of it. And a voucher, I think, is, well, in this case, I think, is like, it was a an exchange of labour or some sort of material good, but isn't a voucher kind of like a promise? You know what I mean? Like, the way I thought about it before is like, if, say, there was an area being developed and they needed, you know, so many tons of wood, and they kept having wood, and another area said, well, hang on, we, you know, in a few weeks' time, we want to start building here, and we're going to need some wood, there'll have to be some sort of, not a voucher as such, but some sort of promise or some sort of, I don't know, that's, I can't see it's what I'm saying, to be honest, if you know what I mean.
Socialist understanding. That's the other way. Distributing the resources.
Yeah, sort of, not exactly with a voucher for an exchange thing, because you wouldn't have to do anything to get that wood, say, but there'll have to be some sort of administration and some sort of record, which.
Well, the administration of things.
Unsaid, yeah. Or, you know.
Adam, I'm sorry I passed you over. Did you want to say something?
I was going to say something about something else, but I'll say something about Labour vouchers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, but it'd be easy enough to issue certificates to people entitled to take something. But the complicated thing would come on the other side, because you'd have to put a price on everything that could be exchanged with a voucher. I mean, and that's where the complications come into. That's why I think this system would break down. Giving people a certificate to say, this is, you're entitled to take this money, labour out of what's being produced, and quite apart from not being able to measure it properly. So, but I think the complication is the other side, is putting a labour time price on something. Yeah. I think what Fran is talking about is something else. And if somebody wanted to use something,
That does need to become the price.
There'd have to be a record kept of what had been used. Yeah. I mean, why do they have to actually sign a certificate saying this? I've taken this, or this will be taken. It could probably be done much more easily by...
An entry on a computer.
Exactly. Mm. Take words of my mouth.
I think it's also the problem with Labour time vouchers. It's very difficult to kind of calculate and administrate the whole issue of how much labour needs to be kept back for future production, for building the machinery of production. So no society can consume everything, or no society that in fact accumulates things like tools, factories, etc., can trying to avoid the word capital, can actually just simply consume everything that it produces. So obviously you cannot consume everything you produce. People who make machinery, for example, cannot consume machinery. So obviously there is going to be a limitation on what you can consume. I think that's one of the other. Doesn't Marx mention that critique of the Goethe program? I think he kind of throws that issue in. Yeah, Jacqueline, you were first.
What I was going to say has been answered just now in that more or less, but I would like to ask Steve a question. Why he particularly chose this subject, this themes, topics, for his talk? What was it that interested you, Steve?
I didn't actually. Richard asked me to do a talk.
Okay. Sorry, I asked the question.
Okay. No, but I actually, what I've talked about, obviously, is not Richard's suggestion. Richard just said scientific socialism, utopian socialism. And as soon as he said that, the first person that came to my mind was Proudhon. And I just thought, yeah, that guy, I need to really look into him. Because like I said, when you're a young man, when I was, like, say, 18, 19, phrases like property is theft and whoever lays his hand on me to govern me, I mean, we're banding those phrases around because they're radical, they're, like, rebellious. But when you really look into this man, he isn't a socialist. He's basically the opposite of a socialist. So really, I wanted to, like, focus on him. But then I found out that Marx had already, like, demolished him anyway in 1847. So that's the reason, and I wanted to concentrate on him. But by concentrating on Proudhon, you come across the Mutual Bank and Labour Notes. So I thought I should really talk about them. And obviously, they are quite complicated. And obviously, Marx, there's the thing about Marx advocating their use in the critique of the Goethe programme. But everywhere else in Marx's writings, he's criticising them and not advocating them. So that was the reason. You know, the subject was given to me by Richard, but the emphasis, I think, is, as I've just explained.
Thank you.
Yeah. Danny?
Well, I mean, just getting back to Labour time vouchers, I mean, they're only practical and workable. We've got about people who are disabled. Children. Well, if you happen to fall ill, the whole idea would be unworkable. Yeah. Plus the fact that if you did try and bring something like that into existence, the administration would absorb more time, more effort, more cost than it'd be worth. I mean, cost in terms of like human labour. So essentially, I mean, we've got a book up on the shelf somewhere like free is cheaper. because in a socialist society, we're going to have people who realise that it's being, not having, that is fulfilling. And the other thing with working in a socialist society would be voluntary. So you won't be able. There'd be no need to bribe people about work. They'll just go and find something that's useful and fulfilling in conditions of their own making, in the company of fellow volunteers, which they would. Then would dissolve, if you like, the difference between work and leisure. You just have life. Being socially productive, socially creative, would just be part of your life. In fact, it would be the whole point of your life.
Anyone else?
Labour time vouchers have been tried on a sort of local scale. I mean, I see a reference up there to the Brixton Pound.
Right, okay. You've been talking about ledge schemes and similar schemes.
Which presumably must be based on labour time.
Well, they're like local currencies, aren't they? They're basically, they are currency. They're just an alternative currency. They just work in a localised area in stores that accept them. I don't think of them as actually being Labour time vouchers. They are currency. It's just that they're in Brixton or in Totnes or they're in Stroud or in Lewes. And basically just an alternative currency. It's just like alternative capitalist enterprises in the local area competing with with the wider capitalist economy. Probably with the, I think really they're quite exclusive as well, aren't they, these Brixton and Totnes pounds? I would have thought, I can't imagine like Tesco's in Clapham High Street and all that wouldn't want to accept a local Clapham pound. But probably the bookshop just down here, just a few doors away, would accept a Clapham pound. Yeah, so I think they were quite exclusive, actually, and obviously for people who maybe can buy their food in Chadwick's, the Organic Butchers, or something like that. Yeah.
I think it was an interesting development within the Lex Schemes about 10, 12 years ago that I kind of noted. And that was that Lex Schemes started growing up all over the country, where people would actually do jobs for each other and they would be credited with so much time, basically. Mm. Although that got to be very complicated in a lot of schemes, in order to sort of keep it nice and equitable. So, does an aromatherapist's labour count as the same value as an engineer's kind of labour? And a lot of them collapsed because they had hundreds of aromatherapists and no plumbers, because everyone wanted plumbers and not aromatherapists. But one of the very interesting developments of labour time vouchers was Lead Schemes. Sorry, thank you. Was that people started getting so frustrated with the whole process of keeping count. It started in Milton Keynes, I understand, that people dispensed with the local Lead currency and just started doing work for each other. just helping each other out as a community. Which is exactly what we would. Kind of the sort of process that we would argue with in a social society. You don't need these things.
Yeah, but I've been seeing on the internet there are some schemes where people are exactly doing that. A hairdresser swapping time with a plumber and a washing machine engineer with a taxi driver or something. It's whatever. They're just exchanging labour.
Yeah. Sorry, did you want to say something, Adam?
Well, it's not something a bit different.
Well, that's all right. I say something completely
different. My comment is, why the anarchists regard Proudhon as their founding father. As you said, he stands for a free market economy and state interference and this sort of thing. I mean, they don't accept these anarcho-capitalists as part of their tradition, but they accept Proudhon. But Proudhon isn't. It's not quite anarcho-capitalist, is an exaggeration, but he's a free marketeer. He wants to abolish the state so it doesn't interfere in economic relations. Like Mrs. Thatcher said she never actually did it, but I think the man responsible for it is Kropotkin. He put all these people who said abolish the state and keep them together. It's the one thing they had in common. But I mean, there are other people. In fact, Kropotkin called himself a socialist.
Yeah.
There could have been a different division, but he chose to say everybody that. That's against the state, even if they're in favour of the market and every time budget or funny money banks and so on, they're all right, really. But they defend that group to the death of people. I don't know, if you go to the anarchist book fairs, talk about the anarchist economics, it's a good bloke, he's a nice one.
Yeah, funny, it's peculiar.
Fair problem.
Yeah, I think it is peculiar. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it would be all anarchists who would be backing Proudhon. So it would be a bit unfair to say that they all are. Just the same as if anarchists were talking in a room and anarchists were to say, all socialists support the state, then that would have been the same sort of false dichotomy to argue for that. So we have to sort of, understand what anarchists are saying, just the same as, inverted commas, they would have to understand what socialists, inverted commas, are saying.
Any questions? More questions? More comments? Anything more widely you want to...
The talk was about let schemes and labour time vouchers, important to sort of analyse the sort of small mindset of that kind of thinking, because it's basically accepting capitalist relations but talking in the framework of kind of what's fair, but it's talking about what's fair in terms of accepting capitalist relations. So it's accepting exchanging labour with someone else and stuff. So it's talking about society's problems in the terms of exchange, where you know we're wanting a consciousness that goes beyond exchange. You know, we're wanting a consciousness which is talking about responsible individuals, because responsible individuals, as a majority, want to transcend capitalist relations. So when we've got people who are only thinking in terms of exchanging homeopathic labour with the labour that might be useful, you know, for electrician, it ends up being ridiculous. So we are wanting the common ownership and a means of production, and therefore people would want to actually go and, you know, with contribute their labour to get that society, and to want that society, to have that society. All this nonsense about fair exchange of labour and it's superfluous, you know. We're wanting that vision beyond, you know, the pettiness of exchange.
Yeah, well, it's the concentration on the relations of exchange, which are obviously dependent on relations of production. The New Economics Foundation, Positive Money, all these groups actually believe that we just have to reform the fiscal system, you know, the relations of exchange, and everything will be sweet and lovely again. They don't conceive of the wider relations of production.
Danny?
Just remind me of something. I often sort of heard capitalism described as a false community, whereas like within society there are two conflicting classes with different interests. And it's I'm always fascinated by words. The word company comes from the Latin with bread, compami. Mm. And likewise, the word community, the Latin root is com, with, and humus, gift. Mm. So a real community is a society where people give of themselves. So in a sense, so when we have a social society, it will no longer be a forced community, it will be a real community. So the idea of sort of labour, you know, labour time vouchers, you know, net schemes, and all this kind of stuff—it's still promoting and still perpetuating a forced community. Whereas only a society where we bring freely of our social creativity, and we can take freely of social production, will we be free as human beings? Because essentially, freedom for me is a life without price. But there isn't a price on my labour, and there's no price on what I need. Mm. You know, I can give freely and take freely.
I think it's quite. Interesting to look at those few hunter-gatherer societies that still exist in the world today, and to look at their reaction to their contact with capitalist society, and they have that. There's very almost no pure hunter-gatherer societies left, but there are many who are still trying to survive. A few in India, mostly in the north of Canada, a few in Russia, some in Brazil. But those that come in contact with capitalist society very largely reject the use of money and everything that goes with it. And it's quite interesting to see their attitude when they're first asked to be employed, because usually they respond with horror. It's a kind of shame to be employed by somebody else. We have the same kind of historical record in America in the 19th century, particularly in Philadelphia, when people started when capitalism started really to develop there, and people were coming off the farms and actually being employed for the first time in that very definite kind of wage relationship, and the sense of shame and humiliation that these people felt, was really powerful. And when you look at that happening in hunter-gatherer societies, their whole rejection of the whole notion of money going along with this whole notion of employment is so extreme in some cases. In most cases, they've been forced to use it, but they use it purely in terms of their relationship with the capitalist world. Whenever they kind of work within their own communities, money simply does not exist, and you know, the social product is actually shared among the community.
But I mean, I think that explains the origin of the slogan abolition of the wages system, because I mean that originated in England about the period we're talking about, like 1820s and 1830s. It would have been artisans who formerly worked on their own who then had to go and work for an employer. So they felt the abolition of, you know, wage labour and the indignities as the worsening of their conditions. I mean, there's been some discussion on one of our forums. People like to say the abolition of the wages system, but people out there don't understand what it means, because they've always lived with the wages from, you know, generations now. I think you're talking about, you know, abolition of the wages councils or wages boards or something like that. But the other interesting thing is that the slogan revived in America at the turn of the last century amongst miners in Western America. You know, not coal miners, you've got a lot of tin miners and other silver miners and so on. But previously they'd been working on their own and selling what they, you know, what they dug out themselves. And then they found themselves having to work for big capitalist corporations, capitalist businesses. Once again, they felt that as a, you know, as an indignity. And, that, and once again, the phrase abolition of the wages system comes up with the IWW. So, but it seems to have been lost now. Because, I mean, as I say, we know what abolition of the wages system means, but in those days, people would have understood immediately what it meant. I'm not convinced that it's a good slogan to put too much, because people don't know what it means.
Yeah, I was at a Zeitgeist Movement meeting about a year ago, and one of the speakers actually simply mentioned a world without money, and there were obviously three people at the back who had kind of never come across them before, and there was a huge and spontaneous guffaw. Yeah, came from, and it was completely spontaneous, because the whole concept was just so alien to them. They had no idea that the wages system was actually a very, as a universal system, was a very recent introduction in human society.
Mm. I was watching a program on television, daytime telly. I thought it was the Discovery Channel. There was a program called Flying Wild Alaska. It's about like a small airline. It flies about to all these communities all over the place in Alaska, and they visited this community of native Alaskans, and the hunters went out and they caught a bowhead whale, and the thing was pulled back up onto the ice, so it was cut up, and everybody in the community had their share. And the pilots and the people who worked for the airline, who worked on, you know, the animal people in that area, were given gifts of certain parts of the animal. And, you know, you can see that this was a real tradition. And to refuse would be an insult. So, you know, we can see how we actually live in certain societies that exist today. And they guard this custom jealously. Mm. Like everybody gets brought up, everybody come, they all help to cut the whale up, and it's all divided up in the parcels up for each family. Mm. No money exchanged at all.
Yeah. Mm.
But isn't that all veins? I mean, they haven't got a selection, have they? Let's be honest, it's fun.
Yeah, but that was like a point. I mean, you know, you know, I mean, there can't be agriculture up there, where there was agriculture, there was gathering of vegetable crops or whatever, then that would have been shared by society on the basis of meat rather than the money.
Nick?
Well, that is controversial. Yes, remind us of before we talk about the aquaculture. I remember back in the 70s, we did some work for a small company called IAS. Anyway, they were mainly concerned in shipping or flying pineapples to the UK. And I can't remember what we did for them, but it wasn't a big deal. But they paid their bill in pineapple. I mean, it didn't catch on. I can't remember it again. But I presume it was to avoid tax. They gave the company a pineapple. I mean, it was all right for the work because we all got, you know, 2 or 3 pineapples. But, how that arrangement came about, I don't know, I say I never caught on. But I presume it's, you know, you can avoid tax that way, can't you? How can I tax you on turn the pineapples?
Anyone else? Come on, I'm sure somebody's got the question flitting around in the back of their mind somewhere.
What about tea and biscuits?
Is this your question?
We speak between ourselves so much better with a cup of tea and a biscuit.
Would anybody like to break now? People ready for tea and biscuits?
Yeah.
Yum?
Yeah,
guys. Okay, yum. For tea and biscuits up the top there for anybody.
Would you like to say, did you say what?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Thank you indeed for a collection of £22. 93 pence and 1 Arabic coin, which we're nothing if not precise, that matters of money.
Thanks for a lovely talk. Yeah.